This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on. Yeah. I should know it's on.
Moisturized today, man.
Whoa.
In here.
Beer. Super beer. Don't put down. You try to blame it on the beer. Do we need to take this from, do we need to start from the beginning?
No, I'm keeping that on. You're right. Hitting in the second season, man, it's really super excited. But wanted to start off something. Man, I had the opportunity, went back to Utah. Watched my Utes play Weber State. Weber State. And, the head coach is Jay Hill, who actually used to play for University of Utah. He was there when I was there, so it was really cool to see him. It was cool walking to the stadium. They said, we haven't had fans in the stands since 618 days. And I was like, wow, you just forget. Mm-hmm. Probably about 2 or 3 weeks into when we were decided we were going to go back to up to University of Utah to see a game, and see Angie's parents, man, I'm a believer, and I also believe that those little things inside, those little voices, if you're quiet enough, when you're sitting in a car, on a run, or doing something, I believe that's God just, you know, tap you on the shoulder, tap you on the heart, whisper. And so you got to have those quiet moments. I went to University of Utah from 99, 2000. And we, you know, growing up in L.A., moving to Utah for college, being a young dad on scholarship. Man, let me tell you something. Scholarship checks ain't what they used to be. They used to be tough. Yeah. Right? And so we had Pell Grants and financial aid and, you know.
Well, no NIL back then, huh?
Man, there wasn't no NIL.
There was no NIL.
It wasn't no NIL. Yeah, you know, it was NIL for –
It meant nil.
Yeah.
So one time, we lived on 4301 Twin River Way. That was an apartment we lived in. Peyton was real young, and I remember around this time we only had a few. We had like one or two diapers left, and Angie's looking at me, and I'm looking at Angie, and we're just trying to figure it out, and it's like second or third. You know, actually second week in the month. Scholarship check ain't coming till the end of the month. Not a lot of options. So I know, you know, I'm going to do what I know I need to do. So I told Angie, I said, hey, make a list. What do we need? So make the list. I unscrewed the license plate. We had a Ford Focus stick shift. So I get in a little Ford. It was a green Ford Focus. Get in a stick shift, two-door. Get up early. Undo the license plate, and I drive up to the this place was called Harmon's on Redwood Road. So I go to the Harmon's. It's about early, about 6:15. I go in there, man, and so I got my list. We need Pampers and wipes. But we need a whole bunch of other stuff too, and so I'm do what I do. If I'm get caught, I ain't gonna get caught stealing one, two, three Pampers. Shit, I'm go out big. So I load up the cart and I go shopping. Man, I get steaks, chicken, wipes, everything, and I walk straight out the store. Loaded up, I ain't got a bag in sight. Load up, trunk, speed off. I couldn't get into fifth gear fast enough, dog. I probably went from 1 to 3. Killing the clutch. Killing the clutch. So I go home and I run upstairs. We live on the second floor. Hey. Bring the babe. And Angie like, what? Babe, what is this? I'm like, just grab stuff and put it in. So I go in there, we bring our stuff in. And what's the point of this story? I'm not trying to make light or trying to, you know, I ain't no snitch, but I also believe in, you know, you got to give a context of who you are. And season two, moving forward, man, I want to give context of who we are, who I am, who you are, who Backstage Joe are, everybody that's with us. Just context of sometimes you look at people and you see them and you don't understand their story. And so I tell that story is probably about a week and a half before it's my time to get on this first class flight. Lord, like, you ain't going to pay this back. You know, it's been a while now. You've been to Utah a few times. You've been honored. You're in the Hall of Fame, Pac-12 Hall of Fame, you this, you that. But you ain't paid back what I let you get away with. So, man, I went to the bank, got cash. So we looking, so we back there, and we looking for Harmons. Harmons is no longer Harmons. Harmons is Utah's version of Aldi's or Piggly Wiggly or Food Lion. It's actually changed into two different grocery stores now. So I go in there, and I'm asking for a I go in there, and you know when you're trying to make right, you know God is going, he gonna stretch you, he gonna press you, see if you bail out.
Yep.
Right. So I go in there, you know I got my Utah hat on, and put these glasses on though. You know, they do got cameras. Man, so I put the glasses on. I walk in, and he gonna say, "Boy, you better take them glasses off."
Yeah, you trying to do the shortcut.
So I took my glasses off, and I asked for the manager. So I walk in. I think it's called Macy's or whatever it's called now. Not Macy's like the store, but I know I'm saying it wrong. But whatever. The point of it, it ain't the same store technically. Yeah. So I'm off the hook.
No, you're not.
But go ahead. I know I'm not. I'm just telling you what's going through my mind. Can I talk out loud and y'all, you know, hear me, right? So I'm like, hey, can I speak to the manager? Yeah. So like, oh, what is it for? I just want to speak to the manager. John, to the front, please. John, to the front. So it's probably only like 40 seconds, but you know, it feels like 10 minutes. Yep. Man, John at lunch. So I'm straight, right?
Or so you think.
Boy, don't you? Boy, no.
Now, at this point, was it a more audible voice or was it still that quiet voice?
No, this thing loud.
It's audible. Yeah, I wanted to make sure I knew it.
Hey, Ninja, don't you move.
Yeah.
Heart just racing.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Out of breath. Like, you know, yep. I ain't ran, but why is the altitude making me short of breath? Well, let me get the assistant manager because John is out. So they bring the assistant manager up. So I got my mask on, right? And I said, well, so I go to explain what I'm doing. Mm. And the first couple of things were, well, you know, I had, or like, man, just quit playing around. So I said, sir, I took some things a couple of years ago that I shouldn't have. He goes, wow. You know, so a typical rational person, he goes, hands on his hips. So what did you take, sir? And I went to go explain, and I just said, I took some things that I know I shouldn't have. He goes, well, was it in the, and I knew this was the Lord having, he said, was it in like hair products? Like, I don't know why. He was like, was it, you know, what particular section of it?
You bald headed.
Got that S curl. Right. That.
but anyway, so I'm like, nah, I took groceries, but I took out stuff I wasn't supposed to take. So I had the cash. I gave it to him, and he said, wow, we generally don't get people coming back to pay for what they took. And so I did that, and it was over, and I walked out. Man, what was crazy is the buildup to doing it was so much more than what I experienced by doing it. When I walked out of the store, it was like a weight had been lifted because it was, I think it was crazy is prior to us going there, that weekend, bro, I haven't thought about that story ever in my life until probably, you know, a couple of weeks before we left. Mm-hmm.
What's funny about that is when you actually did the act of the borrowing of the goods, you weren't as nervous as going back to have a conversation about what you did.
He ain't borrowing because he ain't bringing it back.
I know, I'm just, you know.
That ain't borrowing.
An air product. Some spritzer or something. But just doing that act, because at the time, you wasn't doing it to be funny. At the time, you wasn't doing it, you know, with your guys or with your teammates as a joke or as a hazing. I mean, you did it because you need to take care of your family. Mm-hmm. Not saying that's right or it's justified. However, you going and doing that, you were just trying to take care of your family. Well, now, because I had the luxury of hearing this story, we had spoke at an event, and Steve had told this story to a bunch of college guys, and that wasn't the story that they thought they were going to get. They mm-hmm. thought they were going to get the Agent 89, the how I broke down at DB, but he had that audience. You could hear a pin drop in there. Mm-hmm. And just that messaging to even pay it back to that store, but the cash you gave, of course, and I think if I remember correctly, he was going to put it into their grocery fund, that when indigent people had come in, when they're in a situation like maybe young Steve Smith was in, hey, I got this in my back pocket, let me take care of this young individual. Yeah. So he's going to be helping out others as well.
Yeah, it was just tough that, for me, it was the stare in the face of a company you did wrong.
Yeah.
Even though the original company, long gone.
Yeah. You gotta let go of the offense to seize the opportunity.
Yeah. So that was that's what I experienced, man. And it was just different. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those reflective moments.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think the other thing too that you said that was profound is sometimes you have to go with that voice that's the small little
whisper. Quiet.
Because that's often the one that is the one you know you gotta be.
That's the real voice of reason.
That's the one. It's that one. It's now over time it becomes so audible that you have to move.
Yeah.
But you have to listen when it's that small, like, and it's right there in the back of your mind too. It's never
really turn everything down.
You have to turn everything. You gotta listen to that voice. That voice has always been the one that I'm like, all right, I gotta be obedient to that one, because I know if I'm obedient to that one, then when I get to the future, then everything's going to be taken care of. So that's the most profound part, that you listen to that small whisper voice. Cause that's always the one, always.
Yeah. I don't know about that store manager voice though. Like hands on his hips.
No, he was. He was like, well, what did you take? What? Yo, was it hair products or was it, you know? And I'm like,
no, you know, damn well ain't no hair products.
Hair products.
I'm my bald headed ass. Right. Why you look at my hat when I said that? No.
I mean, you the one covering up like it's a red toupee.
No,
that Billy D. Williams back in the day.
Billy D. Williams.
Y'all finish?
No, not really. I keep going. Right.
Who we got?
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got Arian Foster, a four-time Pro Bowl running back for the Houston Texans and Miami Dolphins. He was first-team All-Pro in 2010. And he holds the Houston Texans franchise records in rushing yards and rushing touchdowns. Arian Foster on the Cut to It podcast.
I appreciate y'all having me, man.
I appreciate it, man. You look good. You look all healthy and vibrant.
Healthy is relative, man, but I'm doing all right for myself.
Relative.
Yeah, what do you mean it's relative?
It is.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know, ups and downs. Life be happening there, everybody. Life be lifing out here, man.
Ooh,
yeah.
Life be lifing. I like that. Our first segment, it's called Get Iced Up. There are random icebreakers. Smitty has random questions. We have no idea what they are. Smitty, go ahead and give him the first one.
All right. What makes you most frustrated?
Irrational people. Or just irrational thoughts. That like people believe things or do things like off of impulse or just off of strictly feelings without like really thinking through why they do or think that way.
Mm. So, does truth exist without evidence?
Philosophical question.
It's icebreakers.
Does truth exist without evidence? Yeah.
Yeah. As black men, we can say yeah, huh?
I got a follow up on that one. How do two people agree on what truth is?
Well, that goes back to the shit that bothers me. not to get all super deep on the first minute, but if it's literally what's going on in our country, right now, is if two people can't agree on what truth is, that's when you have the discord, the dissonance, right? So you have to agree that there has to be a methodology in order to get the closest to truth. Because when you're talking about it philosophically, you can only learn things to be true to a certain degree. Like, there's no absolute truth, and this is getting a little deeper than I anticipated. But so you have to agree that the degree in which we're calling something true has to be derived from like a methodology. And if we can't agree on that methodology, then there's really no point in us even having a conversation.
Exactly. Mm. Leads me to, what does success look like to you?
Yeah. That's a great question, actually. Now, this is one of the better questions in the world. Like, when you talk to young cats, right? When you talk to young cats who have all these dreams, goals, and ambitions, it's one of the things that I always tell them is, like, make sure you understand and define your success, because you're always going to be chasing that rainbow. Like, there's always a bigger car or a better car, a bigger house or whatever. It can be so defined what your success is. And so to me, success looks like a healthy, happy family that can get up and enjoy the day without having to worry about society's woes.
Well, you know, that ain't real life then. Wow. I'm just being honest. Like, that is.
Yeah.
That's you talking about methodology, man. That's a mindset in which a lot of people find extremely difficult to mm-hmm. process to. And I personally believe, especially with the ages 14 through 25, 95% of those people are leading to suicide. 95% mm-hmm. of our suicide rate right now, from 2016 to currently today, 14 through 25, and that is exactly has to do with what you define success, right? And some mm-hmm. and social media defines success in an unrealistic and almost kind of, you know, and we hear this in football, perception is reality, right? Mm-hmm. What people perceive you as is what they believe you are, even though contrary to belief and evidence that would show, right? I just did a podcast, this is a father podcast, and he asked me about some questions, but then he said, why do you do your podcast? And I said, well, I do it because I want to give people an opportunity to reveal who they are outside of their role. Because I had a speaking engagement, which a guy waited till after the speaking engagement. And he said, you know, he was an older gentleman. And he said, you know, I respect you. And as a young man, I really admire how you've grown. Because as a football player, I particularly didn't like you. And I really wasn't sure how to take that backhanded compliment. But what stuck with me is he took my role or my job and formulated his opinion of who I am as a man and as an employee of the NFL to say, or disqualify me in every other area of my life because of how I play football. Mm-hmm. And I just found that interesting.
That's the world we live in, though, man.
Oh, I know. I know. But if we do that to them, meaning someone else, oh, they're offended. You know, leave a bad review on something that they work at. Oh, they get they socks in a tizzy, right? Imagine if we started leaving reviews at the person at the register at a bank or at a store, and just start saying, "Man, great store, horrible service," and then start name dropping.
Talking about you about to be a Karen out here, man.
Hey, man, listen, I've had a lot of time on my hands, right? I've had a lot of time on hands, so I started to, you know, I just started to think about it. I was like, what if? I love Cut to It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut to It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut to It.
Facebook?
Cut to It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. Cuttoitpodcast.com.
Where are you living these days?
I'm still out in Houston, man. I got all my babies out there, so until they, you know, are out on their own and experiencing the world, I'm gonna be there. I got a foot in there at least.
All right. How has life been for you for the last 18 months?
Oh man, well, split with my lady, and I think that was like one of the first times where really experienced heartbreak. Because before, I think I had been, I want to say a womanizer, man, but like I played the game a lot, right? And so this is the first time where I was really like invested in a family like that. And so, long story short, yeah, experienced some heartbreak to where it was like really transformative, and it kind of changed the way that I viewed things, kind of changed the way I looked at myself. And, you know, in the midst of it, just kind of figuring out forgiveness and trying to meet people where they at instead of where I expect them to be. And that's been really helpful.
So we always started off this way. I love asking it this way. You know, where are you from? And the place you call your hometown?
Grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Went to high school in San Diego, so I kind of rep both. Both kind of rep me. So I call both home.
Okay. All right. Yeah. How would you describe your childhood?
chaotic, but fun. It was chaotic.
Elaborate on that if you dare to.
Yeah. So I grew up, I mean, it's not a story nobody's heard before, but I grew up in a domestically violent household, grew up in poverty. And so kind of navigating those waters and trying to hold on to a dream you have as a kid, it gets, you know, it gets dramatic. There's just a lot of moving pieces, a lot of emotional baggage you have to work through in your latter years that you were unable to. And then, you know, the family dynamic that comes with that as well, as being a breadwinner in your family from somebody from first generation wealth to being able to manage all of those relationships and the expectations that come with that, friendships. So, yeah.
Man, I read something that my research team gave me, which was really good. And I want to park on it. You were raised in an Islamic household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my father was Muslim. I believe he was raised Catholic, but
You can't just say that casually and then scoot over it. Like,
yeah, I was gonna die. When I say Muslim in the house I grew up in, it's not the like traditional Eastern Muslim, right? It's more so the Americanized. FOI, Fruit of Islam, Minister Farrakhan, like it was that sect of Islam that I grew up underneath, which is basically the same thing, except that they are a little more politically active and politically motivated. Mm-hmm. So like in order to be in the FOI, like you have to have a very good foundation, and you have to understand your Black history, you have to understand your Bible, you have to understand your Quran. And I think growing up in that household, which obviously I'm not a Muslim anymore, but I grew up in that household, it allowed me to get a good root foundation of religion in general. Because I think if you're born in a, from my experience anyway, but if you're born in a Christian home, if you're born in a Catholic home, I grew up around a lot of Christians and Catholics. They're not really necessarily interested in other religions. But when you grow up in that household that I grew up in, we are. And it's more so to understand. It's also they intersect, right? So not to get too deep into it, but
you can get as deep as you want, Paul.
I bet.
Whoa.
Jesus in the Jesus in a Christian belief is the last prophet before God is supposed to have come back. In Islam, Muhammad is that, right? And Jesus was a prophet in Islam. And so they view and love Jesus like a prophet, but they just don't view him as divine like Christians do. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of healthy respect and love for a lot of the teachings that Jesus brought from the perspective of a Muslim. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, growing up in that household, it allowed me to kind of get, allowed me to get kind of a baseline understanding of the world religions, the major world religions. Mm. And so that's kind of how I navigated my theological belief system, was kind of trying to understand it all. And I mean, that journey took me to an entirely different place, but I think the root of it was necessary in not being pigeonholed into this is the truth, because we say it's the truth, and anything else, you're going against the family, you're going against, that's kind of what I ran up into when I went to college. When you go to college, this was like pre-internet days, real internet days, right? There was internet, but it wasn't like it is today. But this was when, where you were from, like that was the culture there. Like now the cultures are kind of melding together.
Some of
the
them,
internet.
Some of the cultures, or who allows them, if you allow them to melt together.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other conversation. But
so let me ask you this then, because what's funny is, you know, as I'm sitting here listening to you and hearing you talk, I can also see, you know, you were always considered a guy who thought well beyond his years. You were always thinking. You were a thinker. And by the time you were, 15, 16 years old, you had the ability to have a complete, well-rounded education of Black history, a complete education of the Muslim culture, and then also obviously other cultures as well. You're living in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That in itself is a unique dynamic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can imagine feeling out of place and being and sticking out would be an understatement.
Yeah, that's kind of been my experience everywhere I went. I'll be honest. And it wasn't anything purposefully done.
No, you couldn't. Yeah. It just I hate to say it, use this word, it's happenstance.
And I was going
to
ask, do you run from that, or do you embrace it?
Well, I used to run from it. I think when you're a kid and you're kind of developing who you are as an individual, you know, your people can tell you, you know, be yourself all you want to, mm-hmm. but still there's that social pressure to
fit in,
conform. You want to have friends, you want to mm-hmm. have ladies, you know what I mean? And so I think when you're younger, it's viewed as a liability to your personality. But as you grow, what you start to learn is it's an asset, and you use it as so. And so I'm grown now. Like, I don't give a shit. But when you're growing up, like it's harder to like when everybody around you is Christian, like everybody around you is Christian and you're Muslim, it's like that dude's a weirdo. And it's like you have to defend that without even. It's not, you're not the aggressor, but you have to defend it, you know, or else it's just constant. It's a constant barrage. On top of that, where I grew up around predominantly, my earlier years, I grew up around a lot of like Mexicans, So you, the outcast in that sense, where you're Black. And so you got to defend your Blackness to all these Mexicans. Right. And then you get around the brothers and sisters at that age, you almost too Black. No, you have. So my mother was Mexican, right? So
okay.
Oh, so man. I grew up confused. So I was like, nah. Well, see, that's the type of shit they used to say. So then you're not Black enough, right?
Yeah.
And so it's always fighting that dynamic socially until one day I just realized, like, fuck these people. Like, I don't, like, fuck these people. Couldn't care less. And that in itself is attractive. When you're unapologetically yourself, that's when people come and say, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just a life lesson you have to go through to learn.
I asked my wife, because my wife's from Utah. She grew up Mormon. But she's obviously married to me with four kids, so she ain't Mormon. And I asked her a question to ask you, just based on being raised one way and living and experiencing life another way. And so, so shout out to Angie of giving me this great question. I can't take credit for it. But she said, as you've gotten older, have you recognized any patterns or ideologies that were passed down from you, to you from your young age that you catch yourself having to correct now that you're older?
That's actually a great question.
I married up, so that's why.
Congratulations. No, but the reason why it's a great question because it is not necessarily applicable to me.
Yeah.
But I see it everywhere I go, right? So my mother, for instance, like she was raised Catholic, and she would probably consider herself agnostic now. Mm. I don't want to misquote moms, but she was like super raised Catholic, like back. I think she was born in 59. So like when like used to do something at the, you know, school and the teachers used to slap you with the rulers and shit.
Hold on. You can't be telling your mom year when she was born, bro.
She gonna run this like back.
She own it, man. So
I know she own it, but she don't want you owning it for her, though.
Put moms on front.
You say, Mom, I apologize. you was born in 89. But yeah, so she grew up in a Catholic system where like they used to like hit them, they had permission to hit the kids, yeah. And shit like that. And so like she has residual because she's not a believer anymore in that sense. She's unsure about the higher power thing, but she's like she has residual like, man, I'm afraid of hell. Like she's super afraid of hell. Mm. Like, and so like sometimes she has this guilt, and we always joke about it. But the one gift that I am extremely grateful that my parents gave me, and I always tell people this all the time, is they gave us the freedom to be ourselves. Mm. They gave us a foundation of religion, like this is what we believe is the truth, but like you're your own person, go find it. If it brings you back to what we believe in, that's amazing. If it doesn't, that's also amazing. Be who you are. And they gave us a foundation, and they taught us how to think and not what to think. Mm. And that was the gem that my parents gave me, and they gave me the freedom to explore without feeling shackled by their belief system. Oh man, sometimes back in my childhood, I never experienced that because I never had to go through it. It's like, we're praying. If you want to join us, join us. Like, this is how we pray. This is what we believe in. And for years, this is what I believed until, you know, I found my own path and my own journey. But I was very grateful for my parents because they never looked at me differently throughout my journey. At the end of my theological journey, to this day, they just like, as long as you're happy, man, that's all we want. So that was the gem that they gave me. To me, that is the goal, the life mm-hmm. goal of a parent. Yeah. You as a father or you as a mother, your goal is to have them prepared for the world, to live in the world, to be a productive member of society when I'm gone. Like when I'm dead, if they can
be a good
human being. And be productive and take care of themselves and take care of the loved ones, like, then you did your job.
Let's talk about that, though, because I'm about to throw a monkey wrench in there.
Go ahead.
Right? Because, you know, we've all done, you know, obviously me and you, we've done football camps, right? You go to those football mm-hmm. camps and you see little Ray-Ray, right? Little Ray-Ray out there. Ray-Ray ain't nothing but, like, 9. Uh-huh. And you see those parents out there screaming and hollering, and Lil Ray Ray's going to take care of me, right? And I just know for myself is I've done so many football camps or been to games, and I started to see those parents who are talking about Ray Ray or talking about John. John is going to make it and leave. He's going to take care of his mama, right? We look at sometimes sports in a way as an outlet. But I guess so. I'm asking you because I think you're a great guess to talk about is we shortchange ourselves, especially in the lower income community. And I think lower income is important instead of saying with color. Lower income, we look for our son and daughter to make that opportunity in sports. But we don't invest the same energy in the school books, making sure Lil Ray Ray, Lil John can read, can write, can count. And I'm asking you two gentlemen, why do you think that is?
The reason why we don't invest into our children's education is because it's not as our neighborhoods and our communities don't have the infrastructure that other communities do. So they don't have the after school programs. They don't have the STEM programs as prevalent as they do in other communities.
Correct.
And there's a whole bunch of societal structure issues.
Absolutely.
As to why.
Yeah.
That's like from the outsider perspective. From the insider perspective, which is equally valid, equally important, is Minister Farrakhan used to actually touch on this. It's like, when you look at Black people in America, there's no natural resource that they have here, right? In order to develop wealth. And you talk about why some communities are more poverty stricken than others. It's because they have been denied access to having wealth in this country legislatively. Like, you talk about redlining laws, you talk about all this kind of stuff. And so he used to talk about how our athletes and our entertainers are our natural resource, because wherever the culture moves is where we move. Or wherever we move is where the culture moves. I'm talking about in entertainment in America, right? And so that has kind of been a real outlet in our communities, is you can make it like this. You can be a musician. You can be an athlete. You can be an entertainer. And that has been a real pathway, especially growing up. Like you say, you grew up in L.A. You see a lot. You probably know a lot of people that were athletes or entertainers that, you know, quote unquote, made it. And I think that becomes like almost a viable expectation to, at the very least, you can pay for your own college. Like, I don't have to, as a parent, pay for your own college, right? Because we're out here struggling. They're like, talking about as a parent, like, we're out here struggling. Like, you can provide for yourself in that manner if you focus on your sports. And so school is like such a long game. Like, even if you do get a full ride in academics, the degree in which you get, like, there's no guarantee for a good steady job. Like, you definitely up your chances, don't get me wrong. You are, the probability of you getting a better job with higher wages is way higher, but it's just a more win now mentality, which permeates our communities. And so, like I said, there's a lot of different variables, but that's just kind of touching the surface of it. It was easy for me to say, like, dog, you just gotta grind. Like, you just gotta get there. You just gotta go. Like, you just gotta be nonstop, because that's what I did, right?
Yep.
That was my mentality. I used to tell my family that. I used to tell the kids that. Like, and it was, to me, irresponsible now as a little older man to say those kind of things, because when you're leaving out contextually, everything that I had been privileged to have. And this is one thing I preach to my kids all the time, is like, you are privileged. Like, I didn't, like, when I grew up, like, we used to, like, my mom used to send us hungry sometimes to bed. Like, we didn't have food. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys get to pick. You have options about what to have to dinner. There was never options. Whatever was there, that's what we was eating. Like, that's a privilege. You see these houses, like, this is a privilege. I took my daughter, she's 11 years old, I took it to like some of the lower income neighborhoods in Houston. I was like, you see this? Like, this is where your dad grew up. Like, he grew up like this. And she just bewildered, because she goes to a private school now. She doesn't understand. Like, she didn't understand that side. And so, like, I make sure she's aware that she's privileged.
That's good.
Not to shame her for her position, because it's not her. She was born.
You're giving a true, but it's a true perspective of both sides of the coin.
And the journey.
100%. 100%. And exactly. I'm allowing her to see that, like, what her father has done, to help bring this family's financial trajectory into a different place, but also in doing so, like I said, when I was in the league, it was more so my mindset was like, yo, you got to go get it. Like, I don't want to hear all these fucking excuses, like, y'all niggas just bitching, like, that type of stuff, right? I was just never aware of the issues that they faced on a day-to-day basis that can be debilitating, right? To where it's like, if I get a flat tire, I can call somebody up and it's fixed and it's no problem. It is what it is, right? Yeah. A flat tire can ruin somebody's month.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A flat tire can be the difference between like gas money and food money. Flat tire.
Rent,
so
rent.
When you, rent money. Yeah. So when you compile like all of the problems that are possibly out there, you compile that with all the societal pressures. Mm-hmm. You compile that with with the issues that people face, you, like all of the generational trauma, like you compile all of this stuff, it's really easy to not have empathy to people who are living check to check, which is the majority of America, right? Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question, it's you have to attack it with different mindsets. Like it's a duality. So you have to attack it from the micro, which is like I tell my brother, right, was he was struggling. And I was like, listen, I don't like this current economic system that we live in, but it's what we live in. It's what mm-hmm. it is. If you want to get to where you want to get to in this society, you have to grind to the point where you're miserable. You have to do something that nobody's willing to do. You have to do it day in and day out and be dedicated to it. And it's ugly and it's disgusting and nobody's by you and it's lonely and you have to be unhappy. Like, that's what it is. But because if you don't, like the freedoms and the things that you want, they're just not going to be there mm-hmm. under this economic system. That's the micro, right? When you look at it from the day to day and you're really telling people how to make it in this country or in this system. But when you look at it at the macro, that's when the empathy starts to come. When you start Absolutely. To throw in all of the things that have transpired towards people, toward legislatively, all of these things and all of these factors also factor into your individual life. Yes, it's possible for you to be wealthy in America, but the probability of it is very low. It's very low. And so you have to understand your place in it. Yes, it's very possible, but it's just not probable. And so you have to be, which is alludes to what we were talking about earlier, you have to be content like with who you are as a human being, which is when moms and dads and they struggling or whoever's raising you, they struggling, they working a 9-to-5, you don't even see them that often. They're frustrated. They don't have the time or the energy to sit here and emotionally cater to a child like they need it, like they need to, right? I have that luxury, but not everybody does. And so we rely on school systems. We rely on, that's why they say it takes a village. We rely on a lot of other people to help raise our kids.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
We didn't get too much into my theological journey, but I used to be like anti-religion. I used to like despise it. But what I've come to realize is that it's not necessarily just the teachings of the religions that is important. It's the communal aspect for our kids. Like it's the entire community rallying around for a common purpose. That is powerful, and I'm all for that. And that was a later in life realization that I had. But the key point, I think, is if we really look at things in the macro, we really start to empathize with people's situation. And it's not to enable them, right? It's not to say it's not your fault, right? It's to say that, yo, society has a set of circumstances, and in order to get out of those circumstances, there's certain sacrifices that have to be made. And it's catering to those emotions that come with that. And that is where the empathy lies, because there's a way out, right? I always tell people there's a way out, but it's you ain't gonna like it. Mm. But it took me years of therapy to unravel all of the shit that I had gone through in order to get to where I went through. Like this shit is
deep.
Like, I used to tell people, dog, like, dog, like I have to mentally put, and this is a little different because you wide receiver, you never was in the trenches like that. But
hold on.
No, you was way more physical than a lot of them. I will get that. But like when you in the trenches, dog, like I used to tell people, like I have to mentally prepare myself every game for like a possible broken body part, broken bone. Like I could really hurt myself.
I have to disagree with you.
Just because you're a wide out.
Actually, no. I one of the reasons why I didn't play, why I stopped playing,
right,
is I had to every week physically prepare myself for the mental anguish and professional hate that I had for each defender that I went against. I built up my anger every week against an opponent. I'm trying to remove him from just the roster. Like, I used to call myself an assessor. Like, I want to, you know, if you have a house, refinance. When the appraisal come, after I've been in there, I want them to say, nope, that it is not even livable. It is condemned. You can, and I'm saying that jokingly, but that was literally how I can't, how I tried to play, which was physically exhausting. Like you said, that day to day, yes,
and mentally, and
yes, mentally, that day to day grind.
It's almost like, and I had a lot of conversations with a lot of my brothers who I played with over the years, dog. And this is a real thing. It's almost, and I don't want to categorize it because I don't want to minimize what like actual PTSD cats go through, but it is a form of PTSD.
Oh yeah, right? Some form of it. Every form of something that you. Where there is mental and physical trauma, especially obviously mental and physical, and they lead coincide with each other. There is some post-traumatic stress.
And then going from that, from like being, because you gotta be crazy to do some of the shit that we did. Like you gotta be like it's not sane.
It's not
like,
normal.
I'm really trying to like I don't know. Put my mind. You in a fight, like every like you in a real
fist fight.
And you really willing to dog, and everyone's gonna die for this shit. Like that's how you feel at the time.
Well, I'm willing to kill. I'm willing to kill somebody. I don't know about it. I'm willing to die.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I ain't for the die. It's
like I ain't like, trying to die. Go over the middle, man. I'm like
100%. But like unpacking all of that emotional, like it's performative, but it's also for your protection.
It's real
unpacking
life.
Unpacking all of that.
It's not a game or charade for the people that who are emotionally invested in their craft.
Yep.
Right.
And so I had to do a lot of like therapy to undo a lot of that because I had to channel that energy into something else. Like it's like almost I needed an outlet in order to get a lot of, cause growing up you have a lot of anger and football was the outlet, right? That's how I got that shit out. Like it was a safe haven. It was a place where I could talk shit. I could be physical. I could rough somebody up. I can do whatever without any consequences. But when you're in just the regular day, that's not civilized. So it's like, but you still have that emotion in you. That shit's still there. And so you have to find a way to get the either competitive edge or that physical edge out. In a healthy way. And that's a real thing that I think a lot of us deal with.
How do you get that out now there?
I got into jiu-jitsu. That's a really dope sport. Jiu-jitsu. I still play basketball, so you know, I get on the court and that really scratches my competitive edge because you know, like I was one of the biggest shit talkers, so that helps get that out. Just stuff like that, man. Trying to find to get physical outlets out and not staying dormant. I think that's the main
thing. When you retired from the NFL, you wrote, "It's hard to write those words because this game has been everything to me, my therapy, my joy, my solace, and my enemy." So reflecting back, does one of those things stand out to you more than others?
Yeah. I think just the accumulative effect of it all, when something that has been the center point of your entire life and has been the driving force for you to get up at 5:30 every morning. When that is gone, you have to rediscover who you are without the catalyst of your occupation. And that is the biggest hurdle I think we all as ex-professional athletes have to go through is, can you have an identity without something that has been your identity your entire life?
Can you?
I, without a doubt, can. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of my gifts for whatever reason I had was I was always kind of disassociated. Like anytime we were anywhere, I would never, unless they like knew who I was, if it was like, you're Aaron Foster, I'd be like, I would never, hated the attention.
My go-to is James.
Yeah, I used to tell people, I've seen you before. Like, I played chess on ESPN once. You probably see me because of that. I used to just deflect. I don't think it was just never my thing. I didn't fall in love with that, the Aaron Foster, the football player. I fell in love with the relationships it built. I fell in love with the freedom that it gave me and the luxury that it gave me to explore who I am.
Man, summarize your playing days in Houston, man.
I enjoyed my time there, man. I think it was, it's a whirlwind, right? When it ends, it just, it's kind of like a shock. And then, you know, life goes on and the game goes on and the city goes on. you make lifelong friends and bonds and things of that nature. But I think that it's just one of those, and for me anyway, that seems like a lifetime ago, even though it was what, 4 or 5 years ago when I retired. It just seems like a lifetime ago, because when you're retired, there's no obligations. You can literally sit on your phone all day. You can play video games all day. You can travel all day. And so I've taken that opportunity to really dig into who I am and to what I am and what kind of man I want to be. And these have been the most transformative 5 years of my life. And I think that's what, when I reflect on my playing days, that's really what I see a journey and a sacrifice that a young man made to his older self that allowed him to really explore himself and be a better human being for our community. Like, not to get all hallmarky, but
I want you to get hallmarky, because here's the last thing I want to ask you there. And I don't even want to use your first name, because I want to use your last name, using in the South, right? What would Mr. Foster, if he can go back, tell young Foster to prepare him for life?
Ooh, lot. How long I got with the little homie?
Well, first of all, I don't know who the little homie is, but
talking about himself.
No, I just messed with you. Yeah, no, man, it's just been such an enjoyable conversation, bro. I want to, if you could play this back, I want to know what you would tell yourself.
Yeah.
Just because because before you say it, man, is growing up, we felt like we had to snatch our dreams. Growing up, we felt like we were starters, but we were sitting on the bench. Mm-hmm. Growing up, we wanted to be influencers. We wanted to be this. You were all those things. We just didn't realize it throughout our journey.
Yeah. I think I would tell little Aaron, depending on what age, I would tell him, you already got it. Like, you already have it, man. Everything that you love, everything that inspires you, you already have that shit. Listen to people, be humble, and you'll grow into what you think you can be. It doesn't necessarily have shit to do with football, just in general. Like you got it. Like, you have the tools already. Like, just use them.
That's dope, Arian. Man, we really appreciate you taking the time to come on our podcast, man.
Hey,
I appreciate y'all.
Man, I appreciate you, bro. It's
I ain't never got to tell you, man, but you inspired the shit out of me as a kid, man. As a young adult, and the way you played, the way you carried yourself, and so I don't think I ever really got to give you flowers, man, from man to man, how you did things, and when I did get to bump elbows with you in the league, it was always love, you know. You'd always show love, and so I highly appreciate it.
Man, I appreciate you. I was always it was always remarkable watching you run, watching how you gallop, watch how you just pick that holes. And one of the cool things is, you know, I had the unique opportunity of playing with Koobs in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
And it was interesting because I was on that, you know, I didn't really care. And so he really does not like conflict.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting because I was Mr. Conflict. If I wasn't getting my touches, I'd ask him, like, hey, you got a problem with me? And, you know, no, bud.
She was the bud.
First of all, if you bud me off the first conversation after a question, I know you're full of shit, right?
Yeah, man.
Right? But and just saying that, you know, we don't really realize as players how much power and influence we really have.
Mm-hmm.
We allow the coaches to believe that we actually don't. And Baltimore was one of that places where you realize you had it.
And so they made it very apparent. So in Baltimore, they gave you rope to do two things, swing or hang yourself. Mm-hmm. And so you had that power, right? You had the power because you either were successful or you got cut and the only person you had to blame is yourself. Mm-hmm. And so it was just remarkable, if I go back and just in a football aspect, for you to pick up that offense and the way it was picked up and allowing that system to benefit you, but you also mastering that system. It's one thing you can be productive in a system, but to master to where the next guy does not have the same kind of success in that system, man, requires a lot, man. And it was just really cool as I go back and look at playing in the system and then go back and looking at all the people that played in it. The people who were successful like you, Andre, Kevin Walters, there's a lot of other guys, OD, man, it's remarkable. But there's so many other guys that weren't as successful because they did not master their craft. And you didn't get a lot of credit, bro. You didn't get a lot of credit. And you I give you your flowers. You did a great job, man. And again, hated playing against you just because of the way you galloped and just you hit that zone, outside zone and cut it back. And it was like, damn. And he'd just be just like galloping, just strutting, like he ain't moving. So,
man, I appreciate you, brother. That's for sure.
You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr. That is me. Is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production coordinator Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
You know it's on.
It's on.